So thank you for sticking around. If you are up to this point, then you have waived all of your right to not have The Walking Dead spoiled the shit out of. So it's just going to be Ben and I talking about all of The Walking Dead, as it were. I am relatively rusty on the particulars of Walking Dead, so I would like to hear kind of your individual points that you would have to make.
Okay, so our sakes and the listeners' sake, let's go over what the five stories are and kind of the main things that happened.
Yes.
First story, you are introduced to your character, the main character.
Lee,
yeah. And he is a recently indicted person or incarcerated person. He murdered his wife's lover on the side, who was, I think, also a professor. He's a history professor.
Yes.
The person he killed was also a professor, right? Maybe.
I don't remember that particular detail, but I think that might be a thing.
I don't know if they specified or not. Maybe I'm just mixing it up with a Silver Linings Playbook, where it's a high school teacher and another high school teacher.
Right.
Anyway, so you're introduced to the character. He's in the back of a cop car. You don't exactly know the particulars of what happened or how it goes down at the offset. You kind of find that out throughout the game.
Well, the interesting part about that is you can actually decide if he's guilty or not. Like you can, like,
oh, really?
the dude asks you, says like, yeah, I know what all of the news reports said, but give me the real skinny. What'd you do? And you can either be like, I'm an innocent man, or you can say like, yep, I did it, which is what I did. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I'm here for a reason, dog. Or you can just be silent, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so you can choose your fate with that. But in any case, whether you're innocent or guilty, you get in a car wreck, and the police officer gets turned into a zombie. You narrowly escape, and you kind of walk through the woods, and you go to a house. You walk inside the house, and you meet Clementine.
Yes.
The secondary character. Is it a secondary character? Another main character? I don't know.
Yeah,
the only two important characters in the story pretty much are Lee and Clementine.
the only consistent, constant characters in the story.
Yeah, pretty much. We'll talk. So you meet her. She's a girl who had been left at her house. Her parents went out of town to Savannah. They left her with a babysitter. Mm-hmm. And then Lee, before he meets Clementine, when he's in the house, he notices that the answering machine in her house has messages from her parents. Her parents sound like they're basically dead or going to die. They mentioned that Clementine's father got in a fight with somebody, or somebody attacked him, and he's in the hospital now, which makes you think he's bitten. The last message, there's a lot of ambient noise in the background. It sounds like there's a bunch of zombies and stuff. So you don't know for sure, but you're pretty sure that they're probably dead or, you know, zombies or whatever, you know. But Clementine doesn't know this yet. And so from the offset, you kind of assume the role as her caretaker.
Yeah.
Since her parents are pretty much dead, you're kind of the filler parent right then. So you have the responsibility of taking care of this girl, and then later on making sure that she becomes independent and that she can take care of herself.
And that relationship between you and her is like one of the best. Like, you know, we talk a lot about the dadding of video games, but you get real invested in like her ability to, you know, defend herself, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before I referenced that a lot of the story was like The Road, and this was one of the major reasons why. I mean, with The Road, it focuses solely on the man and his son, and the man preparing his son to try and make it in this world as he dies, you know?
Each was the other's world entire.
Yeah, that too. And this is, I mean, the major story arc in this is the same thing. You know, you're looking out for this girl the entire time. I mean, there's events that happen throughout, but like the emotional beacon or the emotional thing that you keep coming back to is protecting this girl, making sure that you get to choose a lot of times what she's exposed to and you know, if she can do things or if she can participate in this world. But then on top of that, you also, choose, you know, her development and her abilities to be independent.
Right.
So that's the first story. You meet her. You go to a farm first. There's a small zombie attack.
Yeah, that
leave the farm.
That is Herschel's farm. Herschel, yes, actually is a really major character in the graphic novels, which I read primarily because I played the game. I haven't watched the TV show yet, so I don't know if he shows up. But like in that first chapter, Glenn, who's the guy who helps you, I believe, like he finds you and helps you scavenge around in Macon.
Yeah,
he's also an incredibly prominent character in the graphic novels as well.
Yes, he's the pizza delivery boy, right?
Yeah, that's fun.
So from Herschel's farm, you go to Macon. You kind of post up in a video store. You scavenge for some things. Video store gets overrun. You leave, and I think you head directly to the hotel from the video store, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you go to the hotel or do you go to the pharmacy?
Well, the pharmacy, when I said video store, I guess I meant pharmacy.
Well, you go to the pharmacy and you meet your first crew, right? Meet the first group of survivors, including Lily, and also Carla, and what's the dude's name?
Doug.
I ended up choosing choosing Carla over Doug just because she was a good shot.
That's right. She had the gun, and I think the majority of people also chose Carla as well.
Also it hints that you could hit that. So
yeah, in fact, this is a website I will pull up as we talk about this, but it's called walkingdeadstats.com. So if you're interested in if the listener is interested in their choices and how many people made the same choice, they can look that up. But for the choice for whether you save Carly or Doug, which is a choice you have to make at the end of the first episode, here's what they put for the pros and cons. Carly knows your past, is attractive, and can handle a gun. And then Doug doesn't know you, IT guy. So it's, when you put it to those bullet points, it's like, okay, yeah, I can kind of see why. Let's see.
Yeah.
76% of the people chose Carly, and then everyone else chose Doug.
It comes out later that he is that Doug is really good with tech, right?
Yes.
Like he is an IT guy, so I guess he can help you in certain instances. But like one of the things that bugs me about this is like no matter what you do here, it doesn't really matter. And like by the end of episode 4/ the beginning of episode 5, a lot of these choices kind of come out in the wash. You would have to expect that if they were going to draw it, if they're going to draw it to a satisfying conclusion, they would have to make it so that like, okay, we find whatever's universal and like what that through line is, which, you know,
this was going to be the second half of the discussion for me.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump the gun on you.
No, absolutely not. But yes, that is something I would like to discuss in full. So that's the end of the first episode, pretty much. There's one other encounter at a hotel, but you go back to the pharmacy, and then you go back to the hotel, and you eventually set up camp at the hotel.
Yeah, well, what did you do for the woman who was bit, who wanted to kill herself?
I tried to kind of like parlay. I didn't say that she shouldn't kill herself, and I didn't. So I remained silent for, I think, one of the one conversation where it's like, give her the gun or don't give her the gun sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think I either stayed neutral or didn't say anything, but she ended up knocking Carly over the railing anyway.
Yeah.
And getting the gun and shooting herself.
She dies no matter what. It's more agonizing if you keep the gun from her. And if you like adamantly keep the gun from her, I gave it to her.
Why is it agonizing? How does it,
just because like you hear her being eaten and shit. Like it's really protracted, as opposed to like, well, we can make this quick or we can let it drag out. So what I will say about the end of this chapter is you get introduced to Kenny, And you're kind of introduced to this main conflict between Kenny and his family and Lily and her family, right?
Yes. Yes. So you meet Kenny on Herschel's farm and you leave with him when you go to Macon. And then when you get to Macon, that's when you get to the pharmacy and that's where you meet this other group of people. Yeah. And I think the main conflict between Kenny and Lily is I don't even know what. Lily's dad has heart problems, so she's in need of medicine. Mm-hmm. And Kenny's kind of like, you know, fuck that. If he's weak, we'll leave him or something, you know. Yeah, very, yeah.
Yeah. Kenny is my family above everything else.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And so is Lily. I mean, Lily, you know, everything Lily does ostensibly is for her dad, right?
Yes. Yes. But she is not as she doesn't dismiss Kenny's family the way that Kenny dismisses her and her family.
Right, right.
You know? Yeah, so I think a constant thing that works in this game is they assume that the player is a rational person, you know, and somebody who can think through things. And so it's constantly a battle against irrationality. And so, yeah. Like, if they ever need to make a bad guy, they just say, okay, well, this person's going to behave irrationally mean or irrational towards his compassion towards others, you know, with his compassion towards others. And so, I mean, that's kind of the tactic they use to make you either like or dislike somebody. I think there's one quote verbatim from the game when you're talking to Kenny where he said, but she saved your life. And his response is, but what has she done for me lately? It's just like, it's like, what, you know, who would actually say that, you know, like how, you know, that, you know, so sometimes, I mean, that was one spot that was kind of a thing where it's like, Kenny is so much of a burden, you know, like I wanted to leave him the moment I met him. I was like, all right, you can leave. I'll make my own way with Clementine. You go, but you obviously cannot do that.
Like the plot dictates that you stay with him for a good long while.
Yeah, for every chapter of the game.
Well, he can abandon you after chapter 4.
Can he?
Yes. You can enter chapter 5 with just you.
Yeah, but I assume that was just for the trip in chapter 5 when you're going to. Okay, so that's for good.
For good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But
because at the end of chapter 4, like I know how it shows like who you're with or whatever. Like Kenny didn't go with me at the end of chapter 4, but he was still back at the house, and I met up with him later.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that's why I'm saying that is that
I guess that's why I'm saying that too.
Oh, did he leave you?
Well, no. I actually went into chapter 5 with everybody. Which was according to all the stats, the least common result. So I don't know if I just played. Like, to be honest, I sided with Kenny a lot of the time because a lot of his actions had to do with, like, you know, what's best for the kids, right? And most of my rationale for a lot of things I did was what can protect Clementine, and usually what was best for Duck was best for Clementine, right?
Yeah.
So, like, when it came to Lily in chapter 2 saying, like, hey, we can't, like, you know, we need to ration the food. And it's like, well, yeah, but we also have to give food to the kids.
Yeah.
You know? So, like for, you know, for the first half of chapter 2, that's the major, stress point, right? Which is, how do we ration this food? And when it gives you the decision, like, you know, who do you give this to? It was like, well, yeah, we give it to Clementine and Duck.
Yeah. Yes, I made that choice as well. Yeah. Who were the other two people that you gave food to?
I forget. I think I maybe gave it to Katja. And then I don't know if Lily was an option. Like, it was, you know, women and children first kind of thing. That's in general my philosophy.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because I did the two kids, and then I gave it to the guy who provided all the food, the guy who was introduced in the second story.
Oh, Ben, right?
Is that his name? I thought it started with a K.
Shaggy?
No, oh, yeah. Huh?
Shaggy?
Shaggy. I don't think so. I think it's like Kevin or Kyle. It's the guy who, since we're doing spoiler cast, it's the guy who gets eaten later in chapter two.
Oh, yeah, that dude. Okay.
I think it's Kevin.
Yeah.
I think it might be Kevin. Yeah, all right. Yeah, so here, before we delve into it, let's just bullet point the last four episodes here. So the second one primarily takes place on a farm and is basically a scene from The Road kind of dilated out into an entire game and told a little bit differently.
Yeah.
The third one develops the story further. You leave the hotel, you get on a train, and you go to Savannah.
Yeah, like the third one is entirely Kenny's story almost, right?
Yes, yes. The fourth one, you're in Savannah, and it's you getting set up there and situated there.
Yeah,
and
it's also like looking at the crazy I don't mean to keep interrupting you, but it's also looking at the crazy social structure that's formed up with like weird eugenicists and things like that.
Yeah, kind of the group structures. There's I think is it Clarkstown?
Something like that, yeah.
There's that, but there's the group of cancer survivors, and then there's your group. And then the fifth one is basically your and Clementine's story. There's other things that happen, but that's the main focus. Also, one of the words I remembered from when you played the fifth episode is you mentioned that your chickens came home to roost, and that's also a part of the fifth episode too. So. So back to episode two at the beginning of it, you choose who the food goes to.
Yeah.
You're introduced to two new characters. I sent you a text about this. The opening scene of the second episode was insane, man. It was so well written.
You're out hunting for food. You find a couple of college students. One of them is caught in a bear trap, and it's like, well, do we leave him or do we cut his leg off?
Yeah. Okay. So here was my experience with it, because I feel like I had a particularly unique one. As I looked for every alternative before I cut his leg off, like I was looking for any other possibility, pretty much. And I finally decided, all right, I'll cut this dude's leg off. And so I start doing it, and it's, you know, it's gory, you know, you're chopping a dude's leg to save him, you know. But since I had taken so much time, it cut me off, and so I was on like the third chop and about to be through and done with this leg, but the time ran out and the zombies were too close.
And so
did you chop his leg off? Did you take the teacher back?
I did it right away. Honestly.
Okay.
Just kind of like, yep, we got to do it.
Okay. So you know how if you chop off his leg, you take the teacher back, but then the other high school student gets eaten by zombies?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you don't chop his leg off, what happens is he gets eaten by zombies, and then the other guy gets shot by Kenny trying to take his gun, and he gets shot in the stomach.
Okay.
And so he's the guy in the bed of the truck. They take him back and try and fix him, and then he turns into a zombie. So either way, you get a zombie out of it, but it's a different person. So when I played it, it cut me off of time before I could finish chopping off this dude's leg. The other guy gets shot by Kenny accidentally, so they pick him up and take him, and it ends with zombies coming in on the teacher and eating him.
Oh, no.
And so it's a long shot of him being eaten, and then it just flashes to the Walking Dead title screen.
Jeez.
And it's just like, holy shit.
That's crazy.
But just the writing of the situation of to help somebody out, to do something that's in their best interest, you need to hurt them. You need to, you know, like physically maim them to try and do what's best for them.
Yeah.
Is a fantastic situation.
Symbolically, and it's real powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in my situation, how even after you do that and make a sacrifice, the worst thing happens possible. And it's – I mean, for me, that was just like such a powerful scene, and it was like such a nice meta scene for the entire story.
Right.
You know?
Well, and the other thing is if you cut the dude's leg off, he dies later, but he still turns even though he wasn't bitten. And that's like a nice little piece of Walking Dead lore, which is no matter what, if you die, you turn.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get that too from the other guy. He dies with a gunshot. Yeah.
So the dude who gets gut shot, he still turns.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. it goes down the exact same way. You know, Katya's working on him in the truck, and then he comes back as a zombie mid-conversation when you get the conversation killer achievement.
Oh, man.
So great opening to the second chapter. I feel like that's where it really starts becoming a game in its own right. So let's talk about the second one. So the second episode's all about their hunger and the prospect of food at this farm, and then eventually finding out that you're eating with the crazy people.
God. This was the first one that really marked the game as like emotionally exhausting for me, because it dangles hope in front of you and you get the sense that there's something not right. Right. And you know that cannibalism is a real trope in zombie media, just kind of like, whatever. But you want to like hope that it'll be a thing for them, that, you know, this might be a safe haven. But this family, right. They're just kind of like, hey, you know, we can institute a trade. You have weapons. We have food. We can do all this. They have this nice farmhouse that is surrounded by an electric fence. And, you know, it's kind of like, Herschel Plus, right?
Yeah. And they need gasoline for that electric fence. So they have a plausible reason to want to trade with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is kind of where the first indication where I think – it has the option to whether you can should talk to these guys or not, right?
Yeah.
And so I looked this up afterwards to see what happens if you say, no, I don't want to go to the farm. And basically your people say, no, you're going to go to the farm. So you go to the farm anyway. But I think it would have been so much better if that would have been an option for the game, is you say no, and then the game ends. And it's like, all right, that's fine. Or have some, you know, kind of little dinky side thing. But like, I would have much preferred them to make both options available.
Right.
And, but that said, that might have reduced the quality of going to the farm in that story, which was a great, a high quality experience.
Man.
Yeah.
The setting
of it. And, for me, one of the parts that I thought was the coolest is the coming storm. When you're eating dinner, when you see the clouds in the sky coming in, you already know that something's off. Go ahead.
Had you already investigated the barn at that point and found like the bloody implements?
I found that out before dinner. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. I think it was after Kevin got shot, but it was before dinner.
Yeah.
So I'd found that, you see the coming storm, and then during the climax when it's like raining and at night, man, that setting was fantastic.
Were you able to stop Clementine from eating people?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't say it was people. I think I said stop, don't eat, or something like that. And that was like, strangely enough, that was one of the things I felt the worst about.
So when you say like stop, don't eat, that's not enough for her to stop eating it.
It's not enough for anybody. They just keep going. So the right way is to do the Charlton Heston, you know.
It's people. I can't remember which one I said, but she did put it down before she ate it. And then other people still ate, like Duck ate it up and the old dude ate it up.
Yep.
But and how great was the lighting in I went into the bedroom, looked around, noticed the bookcase was there, didn't do anything, put the cords back together. And then when you walk back in the bedroom and you just see that glow around the bookcase, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's like fantastic. For how basic the graphics are, they just do so much with it. And like, The graphics, like the character design and proportions, they're more like the first trade paperback of Walking Dead than anything else, which is kind of a shame, because I wish the rest of it looked as good as that. Just how much they do with so little, it's just tremendous, right?
Yeah.
Seeing that dude with those legs cut off, man, I don't even know. And when he comes back later as a zombie,
And the setting immediately after, when you're put in the freezer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so did you kill Larry with a cinder block?
With the salt, wasn't it a salt block?
I think so. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I did not. I tried to give him CPR.
Yeah, I did too. But then Kenny killed him.
Yes, and very graphically too. You see the lower half of his jaw, and
it was real messed up. I didn't like Larry at all. But you know, they don't go a long way to ingratiate him to you. So,
yeah. He's, you know, one of those, like Kenny is just like for no reason, just mean to you or just makes.
So I want to step out here, like right now, and just say that Kenny, like later on becomes likable, but it's only after like really tragic stuff happens to him. And it's only in light of his relationship with Ben.
Yeah. I was going to say it wasn't until the very last scene that he was likable in my book.
Right.
But yeah,
it's only after you say like, hey, yeah, dog, Ben wanted to kill himself over because of, you know, over what he did to your family, that it was like, oh, okay. And it was like, everybody was redeemed because of Ben's outburst against him. It was like, oh, that actually got Kennedy to see reason.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about some of the other points. The crazy woman in the woods, the quote unquote crazy woman, justifiably crazy woman in the woods. did you shoot her or did the other person shoot her?
I shot her.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, you are one of the small minority to do that.
I know, right? That's weird.
Only 12% did. You got itchy trigger fingers.
Well, she was threatening me, dog.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. For me, I kind of use the cheat code of like, well, I know she can't kill me, so.
Yeah, I suppose. Like, but I mean, there are game over circumstances, right? And I don't want to have a game over. So.
Yeah. I kind of – that was one thing is they don't – see, that's one thing that Heavy Rain had that this game doesn't is with Heavy Rain, if your character died, they would be like, okay, he's dead. You can't play him anymore. Yep. Like they had a penalty. Done. Exactly. Yeah. In this game, if Lee died, you immediately did over what you messed up and corrected it. So, yeah.
What I like about this crazy woman is like she's a dark mirror of you. Like this is a girl who has no relationship to her, right? But she wants to protect him, you know. And her story, like you don't find this out until the end, until after you watch the tape. But you know, like she did she watch her own kids get raped? Or did or was she herself raped or something like that?
She herself was raped, yes, by the raiders,
and she was trying to protect Clem from the rapists, which like that's not a bad thing for somebody to do, you know. She was really far gone by the point that you saw her, you know, because she was stalking you for a while, but you know, I felt bad having shot her, given that she really just wanted to protect Clem. You know, which was my same motivation, you know?
Yeah. And then the ending line of the video of, well, don't worry, the raiders won't come after you as long as they still are getting supplies from such and such farms. go ahead.
Like that's not the biggest kicker at the end of this, though, because you find a station wagon full of goodies.
Yes. So at the time of the story, that's probably the biggest kicker. But yeah, over the course of the game in full, yes, the station wagon is definitely the biggest part, only because of the fifth act. Up until that point, it was kind of useless. Yeah. So did you take items from the station wagon or not?
I did.
You did not?
I did take them. Which
I did as well.
I'm surprised to see how close the margin is. 55.7 did, 44.3 did not.
Yeah. I mean, so the way I was justifying it in my head is I didn't know since the people who had that station wagon were nowhere near. Mm-hmm. And there was no way of telling if they were alive or not. It's kind of like if they were alive, they would probably be in a desperate situation enough where they would take their supplies with them, no matter what they're doing, you know. So the fact that the car is not there and that no one is around, I felt like it was more justifiable to take it then. I know it's not. I mean, that's a situation where there's not really a right answer, you know. Do you think so, or do you?
it's one of those things where the fact that there's no moral right answer to it, you know, do you protect your own or do you just, leave well enough alone and try and go it there. Knowing in hindsight that colors my ideas, which is like if you take the food, the stranger still, loses his family. Whereas if you decide not to take the food, you still take the batteries for Clem's radio, which still fucks him over. So like knowing that, at the time I was just kind of like, okay, let's protect my own. Right. Mm-hmm. And I forget if there was a dialogue option that said like, let's not take it all, but let's take enough to, get us to the next port, to the next port. Right.
There wasn't, because that's what I would have done. That was my first instinct, was like, all right, well, let's take half then in case somebody needs that. Then they still have something,
So
that was not enough.
So my logic, at least in hindsight, would have been, if they were pissing, they'd probably be in pissing distance. They were around, we know this area a lot, so we probably would have seen them. So they might have just, turned or killed themselves. So it's ours, finders, keepers, losers, weepers, which really isn't any way to live your life, but, as you do.
That's not logic that you would be able to apply to a non-zombie apocalypse world.
Exactly. Yeah.
But zombie apocalypse, but
This is genre fiction, right?
Yes.
It's genre fiction, and you apply the rules of the genre to what you're consuming.
Yes. Quite. So back to the farm though. Before we get to the car, I have three questions. So did you kill the two brothers?
Yes.
Both of them?
Yep.
Oh, another minority. Only 17% did that.
I know that loose ends come back to strangle you.
I see. But the first dude, you kill him with the pitchfork, correct?
Yeah.
So you pitchfork his face, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That was one thing, is I didn't want to see that. But then also, I knew Clem was around. So you killed a man in front of Clementine, right?
Yes.
So that's fucked up.
To protect me. I was doing what I had to for my little girl, Ben.
But that's pretty interesting though, because we both made decisions thinking about Clementine. Right. So you made yours saying, I don't want anyone to hurt Clementine, so I'm gonna kill this guy.
You wanted to eat her.
Yes. But I made my decision as like, all right, I don't want to murder a person in front of Clementine, because that's going to teach her that it's okay to murder other human beings, and I don't want to teach her that.
I agree with that. The way that I rationalized it was I needed to teach her to kill people who wanted to eat her.
Gotcha. Okay. Like, but that's interesting, though. That's interesting.
Yeah. I feel bad, like in hindsight. I mean, most of these decisions, they're made under duress, right?
You got quite a body count stacking up here, Cole.
I do. They're made under duress. There's a time limit, and you do what's in your gut. And I gotta say, I got murder all up in my guts.
In your guts. Okay. Third question, when you're approaching the house with the mother in it, did you call out to her?
Yes.
Okay. I want to see what happens if you're silent, but I don't know. Yeah, I did too. Mm-hmm. Man, fantastic though. Again, the setting, the lighting, the fact that it's raining and lightninging, but it's like pitch black, seeing the lit up house, the way that they light up the house in the dark. And then later when you're approaching her in the hallway and you just see the zombie at the top of the stairs, with his arms waggling around and her slowly backing up to it. Man, fantastic.
It's this weird paradox because like that scene, it became pretty obvious that like the zombie attacks were just a plot contrivance to move things along, which is a thing in The Walking Dead. Like, the only time that happens in the graphic novels is when they get too comfortable in a place. Well, we got to have them get attacked. Right.
Yeah.
But it was so effective from a presentation standpoint. Right. Mm-hmm. just how claustrophobic and how, you know, it wasn't just your group against the zombies. That would have been one thing, but it was your group against a vengeful and hungry family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, episode two, fantastic, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say that and the fifth one are probably like my top two, I think.
Yeah. I liked episode four a lot, except for that one, really? that one girl, but
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We'll get to that. we're chugging right along here.
Yeah.
Chugging like a train, perhaps. Episode three.
Yeah.
Okay. So episode three, your whatever character you saved in episode one gets killed.
Yeah, that was the tensest scene. Like, have you seen the video of like the reactions? So Telltale at the DICE conference came out and like said like, okay, here's what we did, and they talked about these things, but let's show the reactions. And you know, just like there are two girls, one cup reactions, and just like there are reactions to pretty much any YouTube video. Insinuating that, you know, Two Girls, One Cup is on YouTube because, you know, Google is a fantastic organization. but like people, you know, and just like people who are watching this scene of, you know, Lily, who is just, you know, beyond her wit's end, right? You
know, yes.
You know, she's in this RV, you know, Doug or Carly, you know, she's just wondering who sold out the group. Right, because it became obvious that somebody was giving the bandits some food, et cetera, et cetera. You know, was it
giving them medicine, giving them drugs,
mm-hmm. So yeah. Stealing supplies, essentially. And like, there, no matter what you do, either Doug or Carly just gets shot in the head
for two different reasons, though.
Uh huh. Well, okay. So I know Carly. Like, yes. because that's who I brought along with me. Did you bring Doug or Carly with you?
I brought Carly, but I watched the video for Doug.
Okay.
Because I wanted to know, since I had just seen the Carly storyline, I wanted to know what happened with Doug, or like how far did he make it in the story. Essentially, Doug serves the same function as Carly.
as the soak for a bullet, yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he encourages you to tell everybody about your past, since he doesn't know about your past.
Right. Right.
So I don't know how that scene shakes out. But so in the confrontation scene outside of the RV on the road at night, what happens is with the Carly one, she basically calls Lily a dumb bitch and calls her out on being crazy, and so she just Lily straight up shoots Carly when Carly turns her head away.
Right.
In the Doug one, what happens is Carly or Lily doesn't even blame Doug as much. She just blames Ben. And so Doug kind of has the same sort of lines where she's telling her to back off and leave Ben alone. But she goes to shoot Ben. Doug pulls him out of the way,
she's
tracking Ben. And when she fires, she just hits Doug in the back of the head as he's trying to pull Ben out of the way.
So Doug dies heroic death.
Yes. Yeah. He died saving Ben.
Yeah. What a waste.
I know. Yeah, so the question, did you keep Lily or did you kick her out after that?
I left her to die, man.
I did too. That was kind of consistent with my decisions in episode two, up to the point where it's like, it's one thing to kill zombies, it's another to start killing other humans.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, that's why I didn't kill either of the brothers in the second one. And so when she broke that was a line for me. So I was like, you know, if you're doing that you can't be a part of the group. Like that's terrible.
She demonstrated that she was willing to kill people who were assets to us.
Yeah.
Like you just don't do that. You just, not just that they're useful, but you just don't kill somebody out of irrational, unfounded reasons. Right.
Yeah, and especially because with Carly, she killed her for kind of small and personal reasons, like she called her a bitch or something, you know, so.
Yeah. And if you keep her around, like if you decide to be big or whatever, like she just steals the RV when you get to the train, which doesn't make a huge difference, but.
Yeah, and this is kind of the repeating thing is that no matter what choice you make at a pivotal moment, things shake out the same way, which is upsetting to me, I think.
And so
kind of maybe starting to have this conversation a little bit is, it suffers the same problem as Heavy Rain in the sense where, even though they tout that your choice matters, the game's kind of on rails in a sense where it's like you'll have a choice and three different choices will all lead to the same place with very minor differences.
There are fewer conclusions than choices.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is always going to be upsetting, right? And in the moment, you can feel like, oh gosh, this is gigantic. But a month later, when you download the new episode and you play it, it's kind of like, oh, this is kind of proceeding like it would have been if they hadn't been there. When I called Lee and Clem the through line, that is pretty much entirely the case.
Yeah. What did you call them?
The through line.
What's that?
Oh, just like it's the line that goes through the entire thing.
Yeah.
It's okay. A thing, yeah. I assure you.
I believe you. I believe you.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's kind of episode three is where you start to see this, because the situation with Duck is the same way, where you're presented with all these different choices. At the time, it seems like there's a bunch of different choices. After the RV, you get on a train, you go since Duck's a zombie, you're presented with three different choices. You can say Katya should kill him, Kenny should kill him, or you can volunteer to kill him yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And so now which did you choose?
I killed the fucker.
All right. And you volunteered, right?
Yeah, I volunteered.
Now, did your volunteer get vetoed and then later you did it, or did you just get to do it right away?
I don't remember the particulars of it, to be honestly.
Okay.
I just remember that I was the one who pulled the trigger, and that is probably one of the more crazy moments in video games ever, which is like you are in first person and your button press determines you killing a child, zombie or not.
Yeah, and especially that's a huge no-no in video games is you just can't hurt children in video games, which that's a good rule to have. don't get me wrong. But it was kind of surprising to see that in a video game.
Yeah. It was powerful. I was taken aback. I had to step away from the game for a minute.
Yeah. I sent you a text about this one. This is where I had a Of Mice and Men moment.
Yeah.
When it posed with me with the question of, who should I volunteer to kill the kid? I immediately thought of Mice and Men and saying, well, okay, if I kill him, they're just going to see me as the person who shot their son. And they're going to have they won't get closure towards their son dying. They're going to see it as me taking him away from them and not them ending it themselves. And so I stayed silent during that option and let them sort it out amongst themselves. And so in doing that, Katya volunteers to kill him and tells Kenny to leave, stay behind.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want him to see it, but then she kills herself before killing Duck.
Oh, wow. So you have to go in and kill Duck anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that is infinitely more fucked up than me just doing that.
Yeah.
My rationale was I'm already a killer, right?
Yeah.
I want to spare.
That's right. I got a big body count in your game.
Well, no. I mean, just even from the start, I was like, yep, I did it. Like, that's just me. I killed the dude. And so I saw me killing Duck as sparing Kenny from having to do it, or spilling, sparing Katya for having to doing it. I didn't know that Katya was going to die anyway. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So with yours, does Katya kill herself before or after you kill Duck?
You know what? I don't remember specifically. It was so long ago. It was right around the same time, honestly. She might have lingered, but anybody who's listening to this who knows was probably shouting at us. So I don't know.
Okay.
I think that she lingered. I remember her doing that, but then she just wandered off into the woods and then did herself in,
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so that was definitely a tough part of the game, or not a fun part of the game.
No.
Yeah, so episode 3 was kind of a downer of an episode because a lot of people, you know, your people started dying, and they started dying for not noble reasons, you know, like there was no sacrifice sort of death, or no valor filled death.
Yeah.
So let's kind of go through the questions here just to get a feel for it. At the beginning of episode 3, did you shoot the woman?
Yes.
To put her out of her misery? Okay. Racking up another body count.
Well,
there.
I mean, I know they're racking up a body count, but like, by this point, I, you know, if I'm playing as Lee, I know what happens to people who get, you know, eaten alive.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of like, you know, like that fucks shit up for me. Right.
Yeah.
Like that draws attention from the zombies for yourself. So where's my medal, Ben? No, I just,
I shot her as well, actually. So yeah. I thought that was the right thing to do. But apparently other players did not, because 60% of them did not shoot her and let her die.
Well, those people are shitheads in that they have heads full of shit. There's no reason to do that.
Yeah. Well, all right.
I don't know. It's the compassionate thing to do.
Yeah.
My definition of compassion is in question, though. So.
Yeah, you know, compassion can kind of turn on and off, apparently. I don't know. Okay, so did you fight Kenny to get him to stop the train?
Yes.
Okay. You went fisticuffs with him.
You know, actually, no. I think that I talked him out of it. I think that I shamed him verbally.
Okay. Yeah, I talked him down too. Yeah, I shamed him verbally too. Made fun of his hat.
his fucking ironic hipster hat.
Yeah, he couldn't take it. I was curious to see what the animation of fighting him would be like, because they get in that sweet pose where they're about to fight and their shoulders kind of bounce up and down. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's like, this is my pre-fighting stance. I thought that was really funny, but I did not see them actually fight. And then at the end of episode 3, after you kill Duck, after the train gets going, there's a little stop because there's something in the way, and that's where you meet the final two. I guess you already met the homeless person on the train. So yeah, I guess this is maybe the second and third to last party characters that you can have. Maybe fourth and third.
I like them a lot. Omid and Krista.
Yeah. I think it's Krista. Yeah.
I think that's her name.
So these are the hipsters, right? These are the two hipsters of the group.
But they're
from San Francisco. Went on a road trip.
I'm pretty sure.
I think so.
Maybe I think they went on the road trip because either Omid or Krista were fascinated with the Civil War history, and
Omid.
And they underestimate Lee, like thinking like, oh yeah, you know, it's like that, and like, and Lee's just kind of like, yeah, I was a history professor for the Civil War, so fuck all y'all.
Yeah, there's that sweet line where I think when Chris is talking with Clementine, she's like, who's into that stuff? And Lee just slowly raises his hand. Yeah.
I like them a lot. I think that, like, you know, you've gone so far in this game with like people who are, you know, to one side or the other of the crazy or sane scale, and they are they're the emotional center of the game.
And also up until this point, most of the people that you've met are people that are south of the Mason-Dixie line. You know, like they're good old Southern boys and girls. So
it's
a nice accent to. I mean, obviously these people seem more like progressive. You know, it sounds weird to even say this or to attribute these things to a character, but they obviously seem like more open-minded and more progressive than the other characters, right?
Yeah.
You know, like they're not like selfish or, you know, immediately selfish and like, oh, well, if this isn't good, we're going to leave you and fuck you. You know, or like, you know, they don't put themselves first in every situation like most of the people that you've seen up until this point.
Right.
So did you opt to save Omid or Krista on the train at the end of episode 3?
I forget what exactly the situation was. I broke Omid's leg, if that is the Did you push him?
Did you push him off the bridge?
I think I might have, actually.
Just wanted to rack up another one.
just the helpful murderer.
No. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the choice doesn't matter. Both of them get on the train anyway. But both of them yell at you for saving them,
which is crazy. I was upset with that.
I mean, it shows you how selfless both of them are.
Yeah. Yeah. Which that's the nice part about it, which is both of them want you to save the other, which makes them good parents for Lee or for not for Lee. God, for Clem.
Yeah. For Clementine. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. And you also meet the homeless person this round. And there's also the part of the story where when you're on the train, where you sit down with Clementine and talk to her about her being independent. This is where you start to teach her to be on her own, you know? And so this is where you cut her hair. What else? You get a map of Savannah.
Yes.
And I think there was a third thing.
You teach her to shoot.
That's right. Yeah. 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 Yeah,
I did all three.
Yeah, I think you have to do all three.
Yeah.
But yeah, so good in the sense that they start building that part of the story, and then also you have that brief mission where it's you and Clementine, where you go to the one abandoned house down from the train station. Do you remember this?
Yes. Yes. The one where it's the first time where you are separated and under duress, and it determines whether or not she is able to help you or not.
You're like in a old fashioned bank. It looks like, even though it's probably not. But
it's like a railway house kind of thing.
Yeah. And you have to kill, I think, three different zombies, but. Which is amazing, because when you walk in the place, there's no zombies around.
Yeah, they're just kind of hidden away. There's no problem. Yeah.
But yeah, some more emotional development there, I guess. But that's about it for episode three, though. I think that covered most of our choices.
Just about.
Yeah. Okay. So that, moving on to episode four. You bring in a bunch of zombies with you to Savannah, I guess, is kind of the implication. I know they mention it later when you're climbing out of the bell tower, and the old guy, the doctor, says, "Did you guys come in on a train?" Do you remember that part?
And
they don't follow it up and hash it out specifically, but I guess it's assumed that a bunch of people just follow you into town because of the noise of the train.
Right. Right.
I guess that's the point of it.
In a post-human world, the train sounds pretty unique.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So you come into the Savannah, you post up at a mansion, I guess.
Yeah.
And you lose track of the old guy, the homeless dude that you're with.
Yeah, right. I forget what ultimately happened to him. I remember him sacrificing himself, but
he separates from the group, and he's just attacking zombies or whatever, and he just gets separated or whatever. You find him later in the sewers.
He's dead. He's dead in the sewers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Total bummer.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. But when you get to the house, the mansion that you're in, there's two pretty grotesque parts.
The both of them were pretty heartbreaking, honestly.
Well, maybe we're talking. The first one I was thinking of is when you dig up the dog, dead dog.
Yeah, yeah. That one wasn't so much heartbreaking, but still everybody's watching you, and it feels like it's foreshadowing on something, right?
Yeah, and then the way you pick up the collar and his head falls off, and it's pretty grody. But yeah, okay. So then when you get to the house, you check around the house, you go to the attic, and then this is where one of the major choices is you see a starved boy, a boy who's been starved to death, and is a zombie now, consequently after dying. But this is the place that Kenny had to search, and so he is immediately thinking of Duck.
Yeah.
And so then you can either kill him or make him kill him. So
I've pretty much always sided with the minority. What did you do, Ben?
I killed him myself, but I take it that you make Kenny kill that little boy after his own boy died.
He was so fucked up after his own boy died that I needed him to confront his demons.
Oh man. Wow. All right. I mean, it's great that given a problem, you can make rational arguments for both sides, and they're fun, you know.
This is probably one of the most one-sided decisions I've ever seen.
Yeah. Did you kill a little boy, or did you make somebody whose little boy just died kill a little boy?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I wanted to harden him so he would be more used to me.
So now did Kenny take him outside and bury him then, or did you do that?
You know what? I forget.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because I took him outside and buried him, but I think you're given the option to tell Kenny to do it. So I wonder how much
I mean, just like right now, obviously, since I've been chastised, I would say I would be the one to bury him, but I don't know what I would have done since apparently I'm history's greatest monster.
All right. Yeah. And so, so at this point in the game, their heart's set on a boat, trying to find a boat.
Yeah.
You know, that's their goal. And so after this instance, Kenny and Lee go down to the waterfront and they're looking for a boat, and they find one that might be a possibility. It's kind of in the water. And so Kenny's checking it out, and that's where you get the first glimpse of Clarkston, I guess, is the name of it, I think. Is that it?
You know what? Let's call it that, but I'm going to look up what the actual name is.
All right. Let's just take a detour here and look it up.
Okay. Crawford.
Crawford.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
This is where you first see Crawford. And so this is the city where it's no degenerates, no young people, no old people, only the physically fit, right?
Yes.
So
Anybody with any kind of terminal or chronic illness would be exiled or killed on sight.
Yeah. So this is like the Aryan group, essentially, right?
Darwinist, let's say.
Okay. Well, I mean, you don't think it's fair to compare it to like the Nazis?
Oh, it definitely is. I think that it is, you know, exiling the other, the unfit, the infirm, et cetera. It is fair. I don't even mean to like demonize Darwinism. I am a fan of Darwinism, but social Darwinism is bullshit. So, you know, that's what this is. Can we agree?
Yeah, sure. I'm fine. Yeah.
Okay.
So you meet this, you get this idea first, and then you also meet Molly.
Yes.
Who you later find out was at Crawford.
Yeah.
And she's the person with the climbing pickaxe.
Yeah.
Did you get the Star Wars reference when playing?
Maybe I did. Can you remind me of it?
It's later when you're in Crawford with Molly in the garage when you're trying to get a battery, and you ask to borrow her pickaxe. And you say, I promise I won't get a scratch on it. And she goes, I have your word now, not a scratch.
No, I didn't get it, but I remember that line. So
I chuckled.
Yes. The,
yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's also another part, I think in the same episode, where she calls you a chicken, or she was like, what are you, chicken, for trying to jump or whatever. And since I knew that they made the Back to the Future games, I chose the chicken ? response. Which, yeah, because, you know, that's funny. So I appreciated those two references in this episode. What do you remember of episode four?
Episode four felt like it was, you know, like the, you know, it was them taking a stand, right? You know, it's kind of like, we need supplies. You know, we're here, you know, we have this boat that may or may not be a thing. There's this other identifiable group almost for the first time, but like, we know that they're bad from the outset, right? Like, so we have to mount this offense on them because it's us or them. And it's been demonstrated either through this young woman or any other amount of people that have encountered Crawford that, you know, taking them out is our only hope. And okay. Yeah.
I had a less offensive option. I was more about, all right, let's sneak in, like, but get in and get out. Like, I don't want to fuck with them, and I don't want anything bad to happen to the group.
Yeah, I guess maybe that was my that was my initial approach. Like, just kind of like, okay, we're going to do this, and that's why I left Clem behind. Like, I, you know, it's kind of like, okay, stay here where we know it's safe, like where we can barricade the doors and stuff like that. Yeah. I left her behind, which, again, I'm looking at the stat site. I was in the minority.
I know. I took her with me because of how that starting to build her up to be independent. I was like, all right, she's going to need to come along. She might need to shoot a couple of zombies. Like, you know, like it would be better for her to experience this and, you know, and at least I can be with her.
Right.
And, like, protect her directly instead of leaving her at the house where it may or may not get attacked and I wouldn't be there to defend her. You know? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Makes more sense than the stupid decision I made.
No, I'm not. Cole, come now.
Come now. No, traveled.
There's no shame in that.
I guess. But that does make plenty of sense. I just, you know, again, in looking out for what was best for her in the near term, it was just kind of like, okay, we know this is a thing. You know, I think you left her armed, which was, you know, one of the reasons why I felt comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But she comes with you anyway. Like, she tags along behind you. So.
Does she sneak?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Good for her too. yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And so then, I mean, there's relatively not too many things bad happen at the Crawford. It goes a lot better than I expected, I guess, because
yeah.
I was definitely expecting something out of the road where it's like, I don't want to be around other people, you know, like, especially another organized group of people.
It's still pretty depraved because, like, you find out that they've been, like, extorting sexual favors from women for their diabetes medication.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's bad.
I can't support that.
Yeah, no. Yeah, and they terminate pregnancies. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, that's, but you don't, yeah. I mean, that's,
you see it though on tape.
You see it on tape. That's true. But they're all dead when you get there, you know, like they're all zombies.
So I mean, it's all fine.
No, I'm not saying it's all fine or anything. I'm just saying, like, when going into it, I thought it was going to be like the road, you know, where it's like, I was seeing every other person as like a possible huge threat. Mm-hmm. And especially in the road, any organized group of people is like doubly a threat, you know, like they're like, either cannibals or hunters or, you know, so
I've got to say all your talk about the road on text recently is like, maybe you want to reread that book, which wouldn't be a non worthwhile pursuit.
Just make sure your self-esteem's high before you go in there.
That's always a problem for me. But yeah, I think the most frustrating thing about Crawford for me is Ben saying, like, hey, guys, you can use this hatchet. It was holding that door closed.
I know. And this is the constant battle against rationality. You know, it's like, I know, that.
Right?
Make me dislike people. Is they have them do batshit crazy things. And it's like, yeah, I don't know how there was a period of time where there weren't any zombies there where he would be like, oh, okay, there's no one here, I'll take the hatchet or something. You know what I mean? Cause there were zombies there the entire, you know, like, anyway. Yeah. So I take it you pulled Ben up since you had all the people with you at the end of the.
Yes, I did. Because I figured stupidity wasn't a crime.
Okay.
Everybody else that I've let die or killed, like they were straight up fucking evil. Whereas he, it was just kind of like him saying, like, I deserve to die because of the things I did or whatever. But like, it was just him being dumb.
Yeah.
And there's always room to redeem ignorance or stupidity. And there's not a lot of room to redeem evil or selfishness.
Yeah, I was surprised the way that they built it up. I was surprised you even had the option to save him. Like, it looked like he was it was pretty, he was pretty destined to make himself die there, you know? So I was surprised by that.
I was hoping that he would redeem himself, you know, redeem himself more than he did, which he did redeem himself, you know, to a large extent, right?
I don't know, like, how so? What?
Oh, I don't know. Just that whole scene with Kenny, like, you know, just kind of like, I had sided with Kenny, but, you know, like, ever since his, you know, his family died or whatever, he was, you know, he was really kind of just kind of like, you know, a real thorn in my side. But, you know, Ben, just, it was worth it to me to see, you know, Ben's cathartic moment, which is say, you really don't give me a lot of credit because I don't know if my family's alive or dead or not.
Yeah. It was like, you got to say goodbye. I didn't even get to do that. Yeah.
That was a really cool scene.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
But I saved him.
Yeah, I did too. But I was very surprised. I thought he was going to die. And then when the option popped up, I was like, oh shit. Okay. Yeah. I'll
save Why not?
Yeah. Well, whatever. Okay. And so then after the Crawford excursion, you get back. Molly leaves. You don't see her again. Also, Dude Man leaves. The older Dr. Dude. What's his name?
I forget. I don't know his name. He's relatively non-consequential, except for the fact that he steals your boat.
we'll talk about that. Vernon is his name, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
He's sympathetic. Like, these are a bunch of cancer survivors, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. He helps you out. He's rational and calm. Yeah. And how random was it? The fact that Bree gets killed at the school, like,
Bree. Who's like, Bree?
Exactly. She was one of the cancer survivors and she goes to Crawford cause she used to go to the school that was there. So she like had a lay of the land or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was at the moment where Ben decides to tell Kenny that he did whatever to his family, which, again, battle against rationality.
It's dumb, like, decision. Like, don't do it. Not when you're in the belly of the beast, you stupid fuck.
Yeah, I know. It's like that's the one thing I was sort of frustrated by, because it's like you're having an emotional reaction, but it's like it's not and it shouldn't be an issue. You know, like nobody should be that stupid so that you would have to have that emotional reaction. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Anyway. But Bree, Bree's there while, Ben is telling this to Kenny, like, she goes, do we all get a vote on this or whatever? And the zombies bust in and eat her. And like, that's all it is. You know, like she like just dies.
The end.
Yeah. they're very nonchalant about killing her, I guess is what I'm saying. But anyway, so she dies. So you don't see her anymore.
Yeah.
Vernon leaves. You don't see him anymore. He comes up again in episode 5. But then the big thing at the end of episode 4, Clementine's gone when you wake up. Her hat's in the alley. Her radio's in the alley.
Yeah.
You go to get the radio. Did you look at the boxes or did you pick up the radio?
I did. I did look at the boxes. You still get bit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I know, which is upsetting. But, you know, of course you're going to look at the boxes if there's an icon for the boxes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, So you look at that, you get bit. And then the bigger – well, you know, so that totally changes the game. You know?
It does. It puts a time limit on it. Like, you're no longer acting in self-preservation. You're just solely focused on Clementine if you weren't already to this point.
Exactly. But that totally changes the dynamic is your life is over, essentially. You have a death sentence, you know? And so now your focus, is totally on Clementine and just making sure that she's safe.
Yep.
Which, I mean, you know, so how do you feel about that as like a game design decision?
I mean, I like it as a game design decision. I was expecting it, like, even from episode 2 or 3, I was expecting the last moment of the game to be Clementine having to kill Lee, you know, because he had turned, because that's a zombie thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to sound like I'm above it all, because I didn't expect it to shake out exactly as it did, but you know, just the sheer randomness of it, the sheer bleakness of it, just kind of like, oh, you're doing the best that you can, but there's still something that's just like way beyond your control that just comes out and gets you and changes every single little thing. That's thematically appropriate, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah. So did you have a sense of frustration of like how, okay, I looked at the box, you know, like I knew that that might be an issue. And so I, you know, I was being prepared. I shouldn't have died for that, or I shouldn't have gotten bit for this. Did you feel sort of frustration?
No, I was I was in the moment, and any frustration that I felt was empathy for Lee. Just kind of like, well, son of a bitch, I just got bit. Yeah. Well, fuck, right?
Yeah.
So, like, any kind of like, you know, like meta frustration that I would have felt, not a thing at that point. I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Because I totally had that feeling where I was like, that's not fair. You know, like I was being prepared. You know, like I
was wasn't observant.
Yeah. And just like the fact that one mistake and that's it. You know, like there's, you know, you have to be perfect the entire time.
You have to live and die with that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but great way to end episode 4 though, mm-hmm. with the talking on the radio to the person.
Steve Buscemi. It is. I mean, it's Steve Buscemi, right?
Is that his actual voice? No, is it really?
It's not Steve Buscemi, but his character design and his voice very similar.
It's
Buscemi-esque. There are two things regarding chapter 4 that I would like to talk about. A, when you find the couple that committed suicide in the bed.
That's in episode 5.
Is it? Really?
Yeah.
Ah, yep. Fuck. Okay, well, let's continue then.
Wait, but You said two things. Were they both regarding that?
I think they were like that, but I was so thrown off guard by what you said.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
I have the benefit of playing it yesterday.
Yeah,
so.
having done it recently. So this is established because of the length of this. We're releasing it as a bonus as a bonus level.
Okay, that's fine. I'm really happy to just talk about this with someone. You know,
no, like, it's great. Like just to turn. Yeah, definitely.
One thing I was thinking about right after I finished the game is like they needed to provide a hotline for like emotional support. After the end of this game, you just call to be like, hey, I just finished it.
It's tough.
I just have someone be like, yeah, man, I know what you're talking about.
Some real shit, man. No, I was playing it. I was playing it during the summer, like episode 2 came out when my family was down to like, you know, like take a vacation at my apartment because we have a pool here. And it's kind of like they're down at the pool. I was like, oh well, you know, I'm gonna take some time, play this thing. And like, I played episode 2 and it's like, man, that's some fucked up shit. And they're like, dude, come down to the pool. And it's like, I don't want to be outside under the sun.
I think I'm going to go sit in my room for the next 4 hours. So I'll talk to you
later. Later, guys. Let yourself in. I'll give you the key.
Just going to go stare at the wall.
Yeah. So I guess I got my order of operations messed up, but
yeah. Well, yeah, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So episode 4, done with that, I guess. But at the end of episode 4, at the end of episode 4, you decide whether or not to show whether you're bitten or not.
Yes.
So what did you do?
Oh, I told him.
Yeah, I did too. So yeah, that seemed like the obvious choice. But that's what 80% of the people did. So I guess that's a thing. But okay, yeah, and so then you got everybody to go with you. I had everybody except for Kenny go with me. So apparently, I had not hid the fact that I thought Kenny was a dumb asshole the entire game. So he was not nice, and so I even got to call him an asshole after he said he wasn't going to help me out.
Oh, nice.
But I did say I was going to go. So I said, yeah, I was like, I'll go it alone or whatever. Like, you guys don't have to come. What did you say?
I think that I might have said that thing, banking on the fact that, you know, because I had my action showed that Clem was an important thing to me.
Yeah.
That they would say like, well, we can't let this innocent girl die just because this guy's a murderous dickhole.
Yeah.
So
something, I guess the back of episode 3 that we didn't talk about, did you tell everybody that you were a murderer?
Yes.
Okay, I did too.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of like, what are they going to do? Kill me? Yeah, I'm gonna die anyway. No, but it was more like, well, yeah, maybe they will see my being a murderer as a plus perk. Point, yeah. As a perk. I will be the person who kills everybody for them, which I did.
XP, yeah,
you know, gleefully.
You went on a trail on episode 2 and episode 3. So yeah, yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah, I was just curious. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's not a lot of reason to not tell them. So
yeah.
Anyway, okay. So back to end of episode 4. Then, so you got everyone to go with you. I got everyone except for Kenny. Right. So I'm interested in knowing, seeing how many people you could get to not go with you, because I know you have the option of whether Ben comes with you or not. You can decide that essentially.
Right.
You can either say come along or be like, you should stay with the boat.
You know, let's guard the boat.
Yeah, yeah. You're on boat duty. Yeah. But something I'm interested in is, say you leave a bunch of people behind, it seems less and less likely that a group of cancer survivors could take them out. You know what I mean?
Oh, chemo weekend and shit.
I know that sounds super mean, and so yeah. I don't mean to offend anybody who is a cancer survivor or anything.
Right.
But, you know, like, it's so perhaps I should rephrase and say a bunch of people who are legitimately older and more feeble, not because
they're compromised physically.
Yes. So I'd be curious to see, so that have to do a YouTube search for that later or something. But like,
it almost seems like, you know, I made the choices that seem natural to me, right?
Okay.
Like, you know, just kind of like, okay, here, I just reacted with my gut, right? No matter what that says about me.
Your murderous gut.
my murderous guts. I made the choices that seem natural. It almost seems like in Heavy Rain when you did the perfect run through for Shelby.
Okay.
Right? Like, you would almost have to make choices knowing that you wanted that ending to where he got away scot-free.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, like, I almost want to go through and play just so that he would end up alone to see what would happen. Because my chapter 5 was a story of everybody coming through and sacrificing themselves for Clem.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, let's talk about it then. About how they sacrificed.
How about that army? Could you cut it off?
Yeah. So that's the first pretty huge choice of the fifth episode, is you get the option to cut your arm off or not.
Yes.
Pretty crazy, right?
Yeah.
I was just really surprised that was like that they enabled that to be a choice.
Yeah. But it seems like it would have a more drastic effect than it did, right?
Well, I mean, I guess what I was just, I was like, okay, so that means that they took into account a storyline with him one arm or with two arms. Yeah. Like, and so I was just very surprised by that they did that.
Uh-huh.
But I opted to not get my arm cut off because,
oh really?
Because the rationale was stupid. Like, oh yeah, if we cut off the arm, it won't spread. And it's like, no, that's not how zombies work. You get bitten anywhere, you're doomed. Like, don't try and – yeah. So I thought that was silly rationale. So I said no. But more importantly is I said, okay, if I do cut my arm off, probably going to die anyway. And now I'm not going to have an arm. And that's going to make getting around shitty. You know, like, that's going to make it so hard to do things if I only have one arm. And so I saw it more as like, okay, I'm going to keep my arm. I'm going to be more able-bodied so that I can go save Clem. And then, you know,
doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I kind of took it as like, I'm going to die no matter what, or I'm going to be infected no matter what, whether my arm's on or off, you know,
right.
The die has been cast,
uh-huh.
but you took your arm off.
That is the more rational decision. Like, I have no idea why I did it, but it just seemed like
knee-jerk reaction. Fuck it, cut it.
Yeah, that was my reaction. I can't say now what made me do it, given your rock solid rationale. However, what I will say is, again, in the graphic novel, in the books, like, there are people who have been saved who were bitten on the foot or bitten on the hand, where cutting off their arm immediately stopped it from spreading.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now, but did you read these graphic novels before? Retroactive logic.
It is retroactive logic, by which I mean no logic at all when I hit that button, but yeah. Logic now when I say this.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's funny.
I kind of hit that hoping somebody would stop me.
Cut my arm off. No, don't do it. Don't do it. I was just kidding. But the scene immediately after that, because I'm very curious to see the animation on that, because after that scene, you climb a ladder up 5 stories. So you presumably did that with one arm.
Yeah. And they present it as difficult, right? Just kind of like, oh, yeah. Man, I really wish I had both arms right now.
The question, does he pass out when he's climbing up the ladder?
No.
Okay. Because that's what happens if you have two arms. Is he periodically passes out and wakes back up?
Oh, wow.
The same way that he passed out and then woke back up on the chopping block.
Oh, so it'd be like if the infection was spreading.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, because, I guess that's what it is when you only are one-armed, you probably just slip, and that's when you fall backwards and have to lift yourself back up, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And in my version, he just passes out, wakes back up, has to lift himself back up.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, okay, so then you get to the roof. You get a look around the town of Savannah.
It's crawling, literally crawling.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where you kind of get the payoff for what Vernon said when at the top of the bell tower in episode 4, where he says, "Did you guys come on a train?" And that's when you see, the entire town's kind of infested with zombies, and so you deduce it's from the train.
Yeah.
And so then you're in a hospital too, and so it has like the "No help," I think, on the roof, written in paint.
Yeah. And you have to deduce that somebody like felt their death while they were painting it.
Yeah. And then there's like a blood stain too, where it's like someone fell to their death and then like killed someone on the roof, maybe. So that's, nice little artifacts to tell a story, much like in Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
So you cross the bell tower, you ring the bell, you come back, and then you make your way back to the mansion. The people. And then when you get to the mansion, I believe it's as soon as you get back to the mansion, shit starts to get real.
You being away for so long has allowed people to get in. And by people, I mean zombies.
Yeah, and so it is no longer fortified, and so you I think everybody goes to the front door to try and stop zombies from getting in, and you kind of chop off arms and stuff.
which is a wonderful bit of parallelism.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that until now. So, yeah. And then you get up, you make a stand on it's either the second or third floor, whatever the top floor is.
Yeah. You knock over an armoire and it's just kind of like, okay, however many people we have here, that's however many bullets we have. Let's do this. So it felt like a wonderful little, it was a very desperate gesture.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this was the first use of something that I was hoping that they would have more in. Because and this was a text that I sent too, is remember like whatever 4 or 5 years ago when we were first doing the radio show where we were talking. It was when we were talking about Fallout 3 and talking about how cool it would be is if they made the road a video game.
Uh-huh.
And this is essentially that, I feel like, after playing it. I feel like this is a very strong case for that. The one thing that they did not take from the road, though, was bullet capacity and bullet conservation. Which I thought that they could have made better use of that, because the first 4 episodes, never a problem having to shoot someone. You can shoot to your heart's content.
Right.
So this was the first point in the game where they actually counted out the bullets they had.
Yeah.
And you only had 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Well, like in Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which is what we're making reference to, the main character, Viggo Mortensen.
Is it 3? Is it 3 bullets at the beginning of it?
I think it's 3 bullets. He shoots somebody who is coming after his son to rape him. And then he has 2, one for him and one for his son.
Yeah, and eventually I think he he uses another one too.
He does use another one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm just kind of like, think about any video game where you have three bullets to use. Right.
Yeah. 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 I know that would, I mean, that's so if any video game developers are listening to this, nice to use that hasn't been utilized yet. Start a video game off, no bullets around. You have three bullets. If you use them in the first chapter, you know, you're kind of boned later on. Mm-hmm. Someone should totally use that. But anyway, I digress. So they make a stand, doesn't really work. They head up to the attic. And this is where you can kind of, there's kind of a fight with Kenny. There's a defending yourself on whether or not they should kill you or not. And then there's kind of a couch conversation with both Kenny and Krista and Omid.
Yeah. You settle all emotional debts at this point, essentially. Like,
yeah.
It comes out Krista crazy pregnant at this point.
Is she?
Oh, God, yeah.
That didn't get revealed to me. I know she noticed the sonogram I noticed in episode 4.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
No, she's pregnant. Like, it comes out in conversation. Like, I noticed it like in episode like 3 or 4.
Okay.
So something like that, just where it's kind of like, and you talk about like, you know, it's just like an offhanded comment that Lee can make that I think you direct him to make, which is like, and Krista's walking for two. Right.
Yeah.
You're just like, you know, when you're talking about how things are going to shake out.
He says that. Yeah. Later on in episode 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, just kind of like the hesitation when you have the whiskey around, right? Just kind of like, okay, you know, Kenny's kind of drunk. Like, everybody's kind of like, okay, we're trapped in this fucking attic, dude.
Yeah.
Like, here's this whiskey. Kenny's like, you know, just cranked off his gourd, right? And then you hand, you know, it's like, Omid takes a pull from it. You take a pull from it. You know, you're doomed. And you hand it to her. And she's kind of like, she pauses for about 2 or 3 beats. And then she just takes a pull from it. So all of that confirms, like, she is wicked pregnant.
Yeah. And the way it went down for me, I said no to the whiskey. And she, like, downed it. She chugged it. I don't know.
She chugged it for me, but she hesitated quite
a
bit.
Yes. She hesitated mine, too. But I didn't know that she was pregnant when I played that. So that makes so much more sense now. But, man. Yeah. As I said, I noticed that she quickly noticed the sonogram. And so. Yeah. But for some reason, I just did not piece that together.
Yep.
And also, when he said walking for two, I thought he meant that she was walking for her and Omid, since Omid had a broken leg.
Because Omid is incompetent.
Well, because he had a broken leg. But that makes so much more sense now. So.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So did you fight with Kenny in the attic, though?
Yes, I did. But that saved our lives.
But what?
That saved our lives.
Because you threw the bust at him?
Yep.
Okay.
I threw the bust of Van Buren.
Well, okay. Yeah. So when it initiated the fight scene for me, and it had me staring at a statue, and I'm like, but I didn't do anything. Cause I was like, I'm not going to bludgeon him with a statue. Like, that's not a good decision to make. And so he ends up picking it up. If you don't pick it up.
Okay.
And then, instead of fighting you with it, he just gets angry and he turns around and throws it. And then I think the same thing happens in both stories. You see the, like, it breaks open a little hole.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so then people start going to town on that.
Yeah.
So interesting. Interesting.
I forget. I don't know if I intended to kill Kenny. I think I just intended to threaten him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's surprising too, because I hated him the entire game, and yet I did not. That was my opportunity to kill him, and I didn't. What a waste!
At that point, I realized that was the only way to get through to him,
to murder him.
Yeah, it's funny that you hated Kenny but decided to spare him, and I sided with Kenny but
tried
to bash his skull in.
Well, that just fits with your rampage during this game. Get the taste for human flesh from the beginning.
I'm a product of my environment.
All right. So either way, though, you find the hole, you break through. That's when you get to the room with the couples that killed themselves.
Yes.
And so that's where this is. So what were you going to say about that earlier?
That it was a very sad thing, and I thought that it reflected on Krista and Omid, and that was the only thing that gave me, like, hesitation about, like, trusting them with Clem.
Is he thought they were going to off themselves?
Not really, but just kind of like, oh, this is a young couple. They did this thing, and you know, when faced with a hopeless world,
yeah,
and it's kind of like, oh wow, you know, but like I trusted them implicitly from the start. Other than that particular thing, which didn't really reflect on them as people.
Yeah, and then there's a nice bit of dialogue in that scene too, where Kenny was talking about like, you shouldn't give up. You should just keep going. Like it's not right to. Kind of reflecting about what Katya did.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then in any case, so after this room is the scene where Ben dies. So you all jump out of the window on the fire escape, but the fire escape does not give for Ben.
Hold for Ben.
Yes, it does not hold. And yeah, so he falls, is impaled.
He doesn't know it though, which is the really fucked up thing.
Yeah. So he just falls down there. Yeah, and so the interesting thing is after he falls, before you can even make a decision, Kenny just goes, he says, "Oh fuck," and just like starts taking a ladder down. And so you go down there, you uncover it. Yeah, you find out that he's been impaled by a spike, so he's kind of a goner.
Yep.
Like in any movie where someone's impaled with a spike, they try and lift him off.
Yeah.
Only to hear him scream.
Wait, I thought that Kenny didn't come with you.
Kenny came with me.
He did? Who didn't he come did. With you?
Oh, no. Kenny didn't come with me at the end of episode 4, but you go back to the mansion. And when you go back to the mansion.
Okay. I thought that Kenny was like a non-player at that point.
No. He's still there. You pick him up when you go back to the mansion. Okay. And when you go back to the mansion, he had been locked in the garage where the boat was. So implying that the Vernon and the others overtook him. Right. And took out the boat and then like beat him up. He has like a black eye even too.
Oh wow.
And he's locked up in the garage when you get back to the place.
Yeah. So, huh. Okay. So because like I remember talking to Gary, you know what? Gary, he let Ben fall to his death.
Okay. Yeah.
So like when everybody is running out of that room and the fire escape is, you know, jostling loose, Ben is the last person who like, you know, knocks that down. I remember him remarking on the fact that it's kind of like, oh man, they kept on focusing on that fire escape, you know, coming loose. And I remember
something bad was going to happen.
Yeah. I thought something terrible. I thought something tragic was going to happen. Yeah. Okay. I was just curious about what that involved. So really the only variable there is whether or not Ben died.
Yeah. Now if Ben's not with you though, I believe like Kenny goes down there for the radio. Like I think you drop Clementine's radio, and so he tries to get that for some reason. So it's a much less noble death. It would be a pretty lame death, but, so this scene totally, redeemed Kenny in my book. I spent the entire game hating him. But given that he, even though it seems silly, it seems like he could have shot Ben and then gone through the grate.
Yeah.
It seemed more like he was ready to check out, I guess. And that was kind of the rationale for it.
It was like Ben coming out and saying like, "Hey, dude, like I don't know if my family's alive or dead or not," and then him realizing he had nothing left and just kind of like realizing that Ben was suicidal after Lee tells him. It was just kind of like him, what's his name, Kenny, saying like, "You know what? We have more in common than we think."
Yeah,
Yeah. So it was his last selfless act. Yeah. Or his only selfless act, really.
Yeah, really. But it was a way for him to make amends with Ben for not being the nicest to him. Because Ben did say earlier in the game, you know, hey, if it's ever looking bad, just kill me. I don't want to get eaten by them, you know?
Right.
And hindsight is clear foreshadowing, but exactly. Maybe not at the time.
But like it's one of those funny things because, you know, it's the Boba Fett theory, right? If you don't see the corpse, he's not actually dead. Yeah. Right? You never see him get bitten. Okay. So Ben's a goner, but Kenny, you never see him get bitten. You know, Lee leaves before anything happens to Kenny.
He's obviously surrounded. I thought you heard chomping though.
You heard chomping, but they could have been chomping on Ben.
I'm just being contrarian here, but in
this genre, they tend to do that a lot.
Yeah. He got away somehow. He broke through. Yeah. I actually read somebody else mention that too, since you don't see his body, you know, that's possible. And so maybe it is. But you don't see him for the rest of the game, so he's dead to me.
He's dead to you because you hated him, Dolly.
No, but he redeemed himself. He redeemed himself. So, you know, he's not bad. But anyway, so yeah, that's kind of the last you see of Ben and Kenny. You climb back up on the roof. You're with Omid and Krista. Mm-hmm. You go two or three roofs over, and then you're faced with the sign, the macabre sign.
What does the sign actually say? I forget.
It's macabre. It's M-A-C-C-A-B-E. So Mac-Cobb, perhaps. But, yeah.
I didn't pay attention to that. All I knew was it was a rickety sign, and I was the only person with very little to lose, so I volunteered to go across.
I think that's funny that you pick up the pregnancy thing that I don't pick up at all, and then I pick up the Cobb thing, and then, you know. Oh, well.
Like, so, if we were playing this game together.
Yes, we would have gotten all the details.
Okay. Seeing that we made the opposite decision of each other in every turn.
Exactly, yeah. We should have played this game side by side. We would have had the entire game down by now.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Man.
So you decided to go first, then. Yeah. I did as well. Okay. Because I didn't want to see Omid possibly die.
Nope.
And so, yeah. You get separated either way because if they go first, since Omid is light, quote unquote, he makes it across without sign breaking, and then Krista goes across and it breaks with her. She doesn't die. She's in the same situation that you were, where it breaks, but she's hanging on to one end and then she like climbs up. But in either case, you guys are a rooftop apart, and you say, "I'm going to go to the hotel." And then you guys do X, Y, or Z. And so what was your choice? What did you tell them to do?
I told them to go back to the railroad tracks.
Okay.
Just because I knew that was a landmark that everybody would know about. I forget what the other choices were.
I told them to go for a boat. And I don't know why. It was a I immediately dismissed going to the railroad track because I was like, that's where all the zombies came in from. Like, I don't want to send them there. So I told him to go look for a boat on the river, even though I knew that probably wasn't an option. It was a rush decision.
Right.
But I think, but do we both choose for them to look after Clementine over Kenny?
Yes. Yes, yeah. I figured they would be the more trustworthy people. Like I said, I trusted them implicitly pretty much from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, this I saw them as good parent figures, right?
Yeah, for sure. Me too. Okay, so yeah, so you're separated at that point. Cue the badass Southern music and the picking up a shard of glass and stabbing your way through a bunch of zombies.
Yeah.
It's kind of kind of weird, but
it was I mean, I saw it as an act of desperation, which it obviously was.
It was just interesting tonally, just to a brief moment of indulging killing zombies instead of it being a thing, you know,
like he knew where his objective was. Right. Because, you know, because this dude said, you know, I'm at this hotel, whatever. He knew what it was. He knew he had nobody else to depend on. Right. Yeah. Because, you know, because he was separated from them. And he knew that the only thing he had left to lose was Clem. And he had a better chance of losing her by being meek rather than by being reckless. Right.
Yeah.
Like, if I get bit, what? I'm already bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Second one doesn't matter as much.
Right. It's Zeno's arrow, right?
Okay, yeah. So you fight your way through the hotel. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy it. It was
I'm not getting you wrong at all, Dong. it's a weird tonal break, but like I saw it as this weird moment of catharsis, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. And then you get to the hotel, and yeah, Hugh Buscemi.
Enter the Buscemi.
Yeah. So no, I immediately knew that this was the moment that you had referenced before on the podcast when you mentioned that this was the part where the chickens come home to roost, hens yes. come home to roost.
Yes. The chickens, yes.
Someone's doing some roosting. but yeah, yeah. And so awesome character, awesome way, an awesome way to confront you with your decisions.
Yes. Because really you are your own end boss.
Yeah.
And his rationale for hating you becomes weaker depending on the decisions that you made. So if you've lived like a saint, this becomes a little bit trivial, but if you have been like me, it becomes more of like a, what's that?
I said he had plenty to go on.
Yeah, yeah. So you're on the defensive a little bit more, right?
Yeah. But
in any case, he is unsettled, right?
Yeah, he's definitely as well done as like the Kevin Spacey from Seven. Yes. You know, and as far
given the head in a container, yes.
Yeah, I guess that's probably why I put the connection.
What's in the bowling bag? What's in the bowling bag?
Yeah. But it's great that they save that until the very end to just ramp up tension, you know? You know, cause he's just kind of talking in a cool, calm voice. You can tell something's off, so you get a little bit of crazy, but yeah, once he starts talking to the head, of course, yeah, that's when things amp up. But, yeah. So the fact that he brings up everything bad that you've done, and you're right. If you have done everything like a saint, I think the worst thing that he says is you let Doug die or Carly die at the pharmacy, which, by the way, he shouldn't have even been there.
Right.
But yeah, if that's the only thing he has on you, that's nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For me, he had that I had left Lily out on the road at night.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing? I can't remember the other thing. There was one other thing that I did that was probably not as nice. And so he brought that up.
Yeah.
But how many of your things did he bring up? Did he only do a couple random ones or did he go through the whole list?
I don't know if he gave me the riot act or not, but I forget. It's been long enough ago. All that I remember is like this seemingly inconsequential act, which was foreshadowed. Like when you're walking up to this hotel, you see the station wagon. Like lit in the same way that it was before. So like, you know, like,
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah.
Right. So like he brought up a bunch of stuff that I felt bad about because it was a regrettable decision in a regrettable scenario.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that was the other thing is the fact that I chose to steal stuff from the station wagon.
Yeah.
That was something that I apologized for.
That was the big one because his entire motivation was, you know, he had a family he was traveling with and I forget why he was separated from the station wagon or not, but you know, you took this and you know, you caused the daughter to die or his son or his kid or whatever gender it was. And then his wife committed suicide and he kept her head in a bag because that was his way of keeping a hold of the life that was, right?
Yeah.
And he saw, you know, as a result, he saw Clem and was like, I need to protect him from this. I need to protect her from this monster.
Who stole all my things. Yeah.
Right. Who stole my life from me, basically. So he's not entirely unsympathetic, but he broke long ago.
Yeah. Clearly, yeah. By cutting off his wife's head and keeping it in a bowling bag, that's not.
Yeah.
A good move.
Or by kidnapping an innocent kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And stalking these people the entire time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So great character in the sense that it was something that they had way back in episode two.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. So the fact, yeah, just that feeling of seeing the station wagon is, yeah. You're like, okay, that's why that event happened way back when.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, yeah.
It's a conversation-based final boss, which we like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because I seldom see bosses like that, you know? And so, yeah, it was pretty fantastic. Especially because, yeah, even like Heavy Rain, there wasn't that sort of, like, let's sit down and have a talk sort of thing. You know, like there wasn't that – as much of a psychological element to it. And like the guy even brings up some fair points about like the idea of you not knowing Clementine's age because her birthday was only a few days ago, and like you guys just didn't even notice, you know, like you know, you start to drink the juice just a little bit of thinking that you might not be a good caretaker for Clementine. Of course,
yeah, of course.
Of course, he's wrong, though. You know, well, you totally are. But
right. You know, you have to convince yourself of that. Otherwise, what else have you got?
Yeah, exactly. You're no better than that. Anyway, so yeah, the conversation ramps up when you realize that there's a head in the bowling bag, and that this dude's clearly crazy.
Yeah.
And then as that's happening, you see the door that Clementine's in. You see her slowly start to break out of it and walk out of it. Mm-hmm. And then you have a choice of you can look at the table and kind of direct her attention towards what she needs to hit the dude with.
Yeah.
And so there's a bottle and there's a cleaver. Which did you choose?
You know what? I forget, honestly. I was so wrapped up in this. I think that I left the cleaver out. Because when he was like, okay, give me all your weapons, that was what I had left over. It's kind of like, okay, there it is.
Yeah.
I don't remember her killing him. I was the one who killed him. you know. And I think that hitting a person with a cleaver is chopping or stabbing, which immediately leads to death.
Yes.
So I think I had her hit him with a bottle.
Yeah. So that's what I thought. That was my rationale, too, is like, I don't want Clementine to brutally murder a person, a human, you know, like I want her to hit him with a bottle and I'll take care of him or whatever, you know? And so that was my rationale. Apparently if you have her direct her to the cleaver, she just hits him in the shoulder and you still kill him.
Right.
It's not a fatal blow, I guess.
Yes.
But either way, there's a quick time event where you press X a bunch of times to choke this guy to death.
Yeah.
Pretty unsettling. And then after that, you have to shoot him in the head so that he doesn't come back as a zombie. So it's like double unsettling.
Yeah. I straight up murdered the fool. Shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, given your history. Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised if he made it through the list before Clementine hit him. So, I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer. You kill him because he's crazy and he stole Clementine. So that happens. You use your last bullet to kill a walker that's outside of the doorway.
Yeah.
One thing before that happened, though, you notice there's two doors in that room. And if you looked at one of them, Clementine was like, there's nothing in there. I want to go out the other door. You know, and so I was wondering if there was something terrible. And I don't know why I would want to wonder about this, but I was wondering if something bad happened in the other room to Clementine, you know, or it, you know, like, but there was no further details of that. So I don't know why they, you know, I don't think that happened or anything, but
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think I noticed that, like, I was, you know, I want to explore the non-obvious exits before I explore the obvious exit.
Yeah.
But I didn't comment on it or note it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, there's no real details provided any one way or the other.
Yeah.
So you leave the hotel, you cover Clementine in zombie's blood before you leave the hotel.
Yeah. Because you notice that, like, you know, they tend to navigate by smell, right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's what they do in Warm Bodies, the hit new Zom rom-com that's out in right now.
Jeez. They do that in the graphic novel as well. Ever since I played this, I've read both omnibuses and the most recent trade paperback.
Yeah.
And I am looking forward to the new trade paperback coming out in June. It's real good, dog. Like I'm sorry to keep calling you dog, man.
No, I like it. You sound like Randy Johnson or
maybe, I don't know. It's really good. Like if you weren't like half a country away, I would just lend them to you. But
yeah, that's fair.
They're good.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. If you like this, like I haven't watched the TV show at all, but they're real good.
Yeah, I haven't watched a TV show either. I'm kind of not big on the TV show from what I've seen, like a couple episodes, and yeah. I think it's kind
of
stupid.
TV show follows the plot of the books just a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Like in broad strokes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, anyway. but yeah, that is a thing in the books where if you cover yourself in the zombie guts, they tend not to notice you.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And yeah. So they do that walking on the street. Lee passes out. Correct.
Yeah.
Passed out.
He passes out. Like as you notice Clem's parents, which was just a little bit too contrived for my taste.
I agree. It was totally unnecessary. You know, like, because there are some things that they should have provided more details on but didn't. And this was one of the things where they provided too much details. Like, I mean, you know, it was kind of assumed that they were dead. You knew for sure that the husband was dead. The wife was probably going to be dead. Right. You know, like, so that was kind of unnecessary. Also, kind of a leap was the fact that it doesn't show it, but apparently Clementine, after stopping and not acting like a zombie, which is bad, she somehow dragged Lee into this garage on her own, you know, and lifted the grate or whatever, you know. So that was kind of a little, maybe perhaps a little bit far fetched, or you know.
Yeah.
But that aside, we reach the last scene of the game of the series.
Good God, man! Like,
yeah,
I cry at stuff. Like I am a person who is not unwilling to admit that he's emotionally affected at things. So I will say I wept, man.
Yeah. I am somebody who is unwilling to admit. So I will just say that the room was very dusty during that scene.
You dude missed it.
A lot of things getting in my eyes. I clean my house the next day. Yeah. Just make sure that so much dust and paint chips. Yeah, no, fantastically directed scene though.
It's a wonderful mirror of the beginning of the game, right? Like where you are handcuffed and you're trying to indirectly interact with things.
Yeah,
but in this case, you're controlling Clem indirectly.
Yeah, and so the entire game you've been controlling Lee and having him walk around and interact with objects. Now you're Lee controlling Clementine and having her interact with things and pick up things. So your role as the player the entire game is now Lee's role in this scene. It's like a step up, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's great. Yeah, the fact that things come full circle and that you're in handcuffs again, nice touch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Clementine opens the door. There's the zombie there. Did you tell her to get the gun, get the keys, or go for both?
Go for both.
I did too, but I didn't even like that decision as I said it. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it matters either way. I think the same thing shakes out either way.
She needed to protect herself, and she needed out of there. She couldn't have done one or the other.
Yeah, but she could have got the gun, then shot him, and then got the keys.
That's true, but if she went for the gun, she would have been, you know, killed. Then again, if she went for the keys alone, she would have been killed as well. It would have been for both.
Yeah. So I wish I would have decided gun, but I said both.
I mean, I understand that my logic is half logic, but just kind of like, okay, you've got two hands. You have one chance. Two hands, two objects, one chance. Go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So, but I mean, that part's pretty superfluous. You get a bat or whatever, and she I guess maybe it's not superfluous because this is the first time that she shot a zombie before at Crawford, but this was the first time that she went toe to toe with a zombie.
Yeah.
And came out on top. And, so I mean, that's kind
of. My little girl's all grown up.
Yeah, exactly. That's the transition. She's an independent woman at this point, maybe not woman, but you know, she is self-sufficient at that point, you know, like, you can no longer protect her. You can no longer even get up. Another reference to the road. It seemed like the idea of sitting down and not being able to get back up and you saying, okay, I'm going to die in this spot and you have to live on, you know? Okay. Yeah,
man, I don't even know if I want to talk about this.
Well, yeah, in the next
we have to. We've come this far.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so yeah, this was definitely by far the most emotional part of the game. And so talking about the DICE Awards that happened last week, how the awards that The Walking Dead got were best innovations in storytelling.
Yeah.
And this is where I completely agree with them. Yeah. And so I thought about that idea of the idea of a video game being able to make you cry. And this was – there is a speech that Steven Spielberg had like maybe like 5 or 6 years, maybe even 7 years ago, where he was like trying to step into the video game worlds and make a video game. And he was like, can video games make you cry and stuff like that? Yeah. And then he made a stupid block game. This is totally that sort of game. Like the story is so well done because from the get-go, I mean, the point of this game is they give you authority over this like an innocent child. And it's like so much more powerful than like thinking of like Half-Life 2, mm-hmm. where the person you're supposed to care about is Alex, who's like, you know, an adult or whatever.
Yeah.
This is so much better done than that. Or, you know, like it's so much easier for you to become emotionally involved. The fact that it's a kid and it's a girl, you know, like, I mean, I guess it doesn't have to be a girl. It could be, you know, like a little boy, but the fact that it's like that maternal instinct. Then on top of that, just trying to protect like this beacon of innocence in this terrible environment, you know?
Yeah. It's that negotiation between like, do we maintain her innocence or do we teach her how to survive? And are those two things at odds?
Yeah. Can you do both? Yeah. Cause ideally you'd want to do both, I guess.
Yeah.
At least that. And so then after she has a gun and a bat and you give her advice, you know, like you basically can say two or three things to her.
What did you say?
So I know one of the options was like, trust no one. Something else or keep your hair short. So I said, keep your hair short for
that's
that what
I one said too. Yeah.
Because it was like, I'm not going to tell her to stop trusting people, right. You know? And I mean, I guess that's totally, I mean, again, like the point of the road, like the point of the end of Children of Men, it's all about like, you know, do you still have faith in humanity or mm-hmm. not? After all of this, you know,
what separates you from Crawford?
Yeah. Yeah, and I forget what else I told her. Maybe that I'd miss her and stuff. There was no emotionally light option at that point.
No,
you know?
There like, wasn't. I recall exactly. My responses were keep that hair short and I will miss you.
Yeah,
you know,
I think that was probably mine as well.
Yeah.
So
what did you do when it came time to, you know, for her to leave and she didn't want to?
So the choice between have her walk away or have her shoot you?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't respond.
Really? So how'd that shake out?
Let the time run out. And so she said she was going to leave before I turned.
Okay.
And that's what happened. She she was walking out and she was looking at me. And then his eyes slowly close and he kind of slumps over and then she walks out of the room.
Yeah. That is what happens when you say, leave, don't shoot me. Which
exactly.
Which is what I did.
Gotcha.
And it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
My rationale for that was the whole protecting the innocence thing. I was no threat to her. I was chained up to that radiator, you know, mm-hmm. It was kind of like, just you need to trust somebody. You trusted me all this time. You know, I don't want you to have to shoot somebody that you loved. So, you know, go and know that I'm not going to come after you because of, you know, where I'm at.
Yeah. Mine was that. And as well as I wanted her to have an extra bullet and I didn't want her to have like the emotional scarring of blasting somebody that she loved in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole protecting the innocent thing. Honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So man, that was a emotionally heavy scene, man.
Yeah.
And then that's the end of the game. And she walks out and then, you know, you get the credits. There's a scene after the credits, but you know, that's the end of the game is your mm-hmm. character dying and the person that you care about, like leaving you,
the person that you trained really you realize at the end, you know, when she meets those new people, you know, in that cornfield after, you know, after the end, you know, whether that's Krista and Omid or what, like just kind of like, you know, all the things that I did, she watched that. And all you can hope is that she learned how to survive, you know, survive from that, you know, as, yeah. as a single man with no son or daughter, like that, like that is my conception of what, you know, parenthood is about. Like,
yeah,
what did they learn from me? And what does that say about their ability to thrive? Right.
Yeah. And this kind of goes back to our conversation of gaming becoming an adult form of entertainment in the sense of becoming a dad's form of entertainment. And it's like, yeah, this is totally applicable towards that age group because, I mean, that's the major feature of this game is your emotional connection with a child, you know, and like teaching and training this child. So, yeah, totally themes of parenting there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what do you think of the ending, the scene after the credits of her in the cornfield?
I was happy because it alluded to more Walking Dead in the future. that's a really shallow, superficial way to look at it. I mean, obviously she, you know, I'm happy to learn that she lived, right?
Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah.
and there are more people out there. That's just something that you learn, you know, whether or not those survivors are good people or bad people, that's a story that's going to be told so long as there's somebody else alive that I have a connection to and, you know, care, have an investment in their ability, you know, have an investment in them. Right.
Yeah. See, I was totally, I was kind of like nervous about the ending because it's like people that I don't know. I don't know where Krista and Omid are. I don't know what happened to them. Those two people probably aren't them. So, like, I was really mistrustful of the ending, I guess.
Yeah.
I was just like, and especially because Clementine didn't hide and, like, she just kind of had wide eyes, almost like she was scared. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, uh-oh, she might not be ready. And so I was really, like, worried by that last scene. So.
Yeah.
So, kind of final thoughts about the game. Again, as the Dice Award said, totally think it deserves like best story of any game of the year, for sure. Well, although I haven't played Mass Effect, side note, I picked up Mass Effect 2 for PS3 yesterday after I beat The Walking Dead for $20. Mass Effect 3 is also for $20 as well. So that's going to be my next mountain to climb.
Yeah.
But anyway, totally great story on Walking Dead. The only downside to the game, in my opinion, is the same thing as Heavy Rain, whereas if you go back and look at all the alternative choices, you kind of realize that this environment that you thought was really malleable is really set on rails, and that there's little – that your choices have little impact in how the overall game goes and even how a lot of the specifics go. And so that's the only downside, in my opinion. So I'm going to try and just not even think about that or just kind of, you know, like I don't think I'm going to play through the game again. I think I'm fine with the single playthrough. Talking about it and looking back on it now, it's, you know, there's totally so many great moments in the story that I appreciate the story for what it is. But yeah, I guess I don't appreciate the pretense that you have a lot of choice in how things work out when it's not exactly like that.
That's the crappy thing, because in hindsight, you want to see those moments and you want to feel them.
Mm-hmm.
But any kind of, you know, reflection upon, you know, after these momentous choices, the way things shook out, like you can't help but see the wires for the trees. Does that make sense? You want to remember these awesome, you know, beautiful flowering moments. I think that every choice that you made was, you know, something that grew out into something that was unique, that, you know, that was unique to you. However, in looking at the experience as a whole, you can't help but think, you know, that everything from chapter, you know, 2 through 3 was something of a contrivance to get you to chapter 5.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's a shame because, you know, we said that, you know, chapter 2 was fantastic just in the moments that it made you, you know, play out. And you hate for chapter 5 to diminish that and make it seem like a stepping stone. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when those wires, when that skeleton becomes visible, it kind of takes some of the magic out of something that when you were in the moment, when you just like, you know, you have these gut reactions, you make these, you know, gut decisions. And honestly, yeah, a lot of the memories that you have of it are gut memories. Mm-hmm. It diminishes it. And that is something that is, you know, I don't blame Telltale for it. Like, you know, just like I don't know that they could have done it in any other way and still released it in the scope that they did for the price that they did and the time that they did.
Yeah.
You know, it's a limitation of the medium. It's a medium that we hold. It's a medium that we hold in very high regard. But it's there, and that's a reality that we have to face. So do we decide with our intellectual dissatisfaction with the way that it shook out, or with our gut satisfaction with, you know, how we felt in those moments, you know,
when
our fingers were shaking and our brows were sweaty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a nice poetic ending.
Why not?
Comparing it to like, Heavy Rain, because I feel like there is kind of a natural comparison there, because I mean, it seems like the same format of a game, you know, like, the one thing that Heavy Rain at least did, to compare this, is they at least had progressive things that you could fail at that did have some sort of impact. So like the idea of the father chasing clues at different locations, mm-hmm. and like each one of those being tests, and how you could legitimately fail each of those tests and then not get locations of where your son could be.
But in this case, instead of your pinky, it was your entire left forearm.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't mean to diminish your point, but like this game kept the stakes relatively high throughout, whereas the stakes that seemed really high in Heavy Rain ended up being relatively small in the grand scheme of things, which was true for this too. So I don't know what point I'm trying to make.
Yeah. I'm saying like, whereas like with this one, like all of your choices, the consequences of them would follow pretty closely thereafter, with the exception of the long-term one of the psychopath at the end.
Yeah.
At least with Heavy Rain, there was sort of a progression where there was like a lot of cumulative effects, I guess, or there was more cumulative effects, right, perhaps. And again, with like characters being able to die at any time, I feel like that's a great choice for game developers to make, because that's something that you can still make a full-size game, and if you're able to work that in successfully, then that's fine, because a player's not going to feel cheated if they kill off all their characters and then the game ends pretty shortly thereafter, because that's kind of their fault, you know?
Right.
All your fault. But gotta work in some Adventure Time reference in every episode, right? But I feel like that's like at least a nice workaround, because, you know, realistically, I don't expect Telltale or, you know, Quantum Reality or whatever. Quantum Dream? I don't know.
Quantic Dream is David Cage's studio.
I don't expect either of them to make like six games and then scrunch it down and then have it just be one, you know, one story with six different branching paths or whatever. You know, I don't expect them to do, you know, a bunch of work just for one game. But yeah, I do want choices to matter in a game for it to have a longer shelf life, I think.
Right. Yeah. It's just a matter of what can they take into account, and what can they reasonably assume is a satisfying experience for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I love it.
It's a very good game.
I'm happy that you like it. I really am. I mean, you know, I can recommend stuff to the void as often as I do. But when somebody whose opinion I respect, you know, really likes it, that you know, that that helps out. You know, just the you know, selfishly, because I didn't steer you wrong, but that you got enough out of it, that we talked about it for, you know, 2.5-3 hours, something like that.
Yeah. By the way, thank you for staying up this late to talk about it, because I know This is much. It's much later on the East Coast than it is on the West Coast right now.
So. Yeah, well, whatever. It's no. It's no problem. Sorry. Wow. I am fucking delirious. Is what I am.
Again, it's much later on the. Yeah. Sorry, dude.
No need to apologize. I'm just happy to have somebody to talk with about. So yeah. for the listeners who appreciated this, because we are putting it out as a bonus level, I've determined now, and I'm going to have to go back and amend the intro to the actual.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. So this is the dangling thread. Walking Dead season 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stars Clem.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any question?
Wait, for the second episode 2.
I mean, season 2. I mean, you know, season 1's done. They've said season 2 is going to continue from season 1. So is there any other option aside from, like, Clem is your, you know, the continuation, right?
Honestly, I'd like them to leave it alone. I'd rather them start somewhere else and just work with other characters.
Yeah, that's true. I could see that being really satisfying as well.
Because honestly, I don't know if I will play anymore than, I mean, you know, maybe if they come out and people again praise it for being game of the year, then I might check it out. But yeah. I feel like this storyline is done. And I think, they ended it in such a good way. There's no reason for them to reopen it.
I could agree with that. However, I am selfish and I pay no mind to creative propriety. So if they decide, okay, Clem's back, she's grown up, and Kenny comes back because we never saw his corpse, and he is her, he's her mentor, he's her Obi-Wan Kenobi figure, and both of them learn from Lee's example, and you know they find out that Lee's brother wasn't dead after all, and you know he comes back, but actually he's possessed by Lee. I would eat it up.
Cole, you are a zombie for this zombie entertainment. You're just willing to eat it up no matter what it is.
If it moves, I'll eat it. Yes. So we're almost literally, Ben, out of space on my hard drive. Are there any final things we want to do?
Out of time and space.
It is like right now, like where I'm at, it is 1:30 on the Eastern Coast.
My computer clock time is set to East Coast time right now. So I see it's 1:20 a.m. So I apologize again.
I said you don't have to do it. So I want you to leave our listeners, our Walking Dead fanatics, with your final thoughts.
I have a final question, and that's all. This game or Journey, which do you think is the better game?
This game.
Okay.
I respect Journey's restraint. Mm-hmm. God knows I respect Journey's atmosphere. And in terms of consistency and in terms of like a sustained level of quality, Journey gets it. But mm-hmm. in terms of the spikes and just how how invested I got into the experience, I would have to say Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because I don't want to diminish your experience, because everybody's experience with it is a thing. You know, I was in it over the course of 6 months.
Yeah, I was going to say, Cole, as evident by the last 3 hours, I think it's okay for us to have different opinions about something.
Yeah. No, so I mean, just I was so invested at this point, and I don't want to say that I didn't dude missed at Journey, which I did, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should get my hormones checked out. they're both incredibly affecting experiences, but Journey was affecting to me on like a symbolic and artistic level, whereas Walking Dead is the most shockingly human experience I've had while sitting at a keyboard and mouse in forever.
Yeah, that's fair.
And shockingly human is it might be the best that art can inspire to, you know. Mm-hmm. and you know, to give one to the other, I would just have to say that I have to go with the human thing every time.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, did you agree? Is that crazy? Like,
no, it's not.
Okay. I mean, how about you? Where does this shake out for you?
I mean, I like them both. They're both great games. They're probably so far the two best games I played in 2012.
Yeah.
Probably going to go with Journey, though, only because I'm a sucker for metaphors. Yeah. And like, for me, that game is still great. Like, it never diminished in quality.
Yeah.
You know, even months afterwards. I saw, like, my friend play it, like, 10 months after I played it, and I, like, fell in love with it again, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Walking Dead, absolutely love it. Again, playing through it the last couple of days, one of the most emotional experiences I've had in a game, like, ever. Fantastic story writing, fantastic situations they put you in, and things that they make you think about, and hard choices they make you consider. Mm-hmm. The choices in this game are even better than what I have seen in, like, Mass Effect in the first two so far.
Right.
So, I mean, they put forth some of the hardest decisions that you can make in a game, which is, I think, one of my multiplayer questions that I put up.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic game, but for some reason, I'm a sucker for metaphors, and so I like Journey better just because it says something about life as a whole, and, like, to me, at least. So for me, I mean, for me, that has a lot of keep, I guess. So yeah. I don't know, but they're both great games, though. You know.
Yeah. I mean, one is $15 and the other is $25. If you have $40 to spend on any entertainment whatsoever in this godforsaken world that we live on, these might be two of them that you would consider.
And The Walking Dead's actually only $20 right now.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you waiting for?
Yeah. Yeah, Tokyo Jungle 2 is not coming out for a while, so you got plenty of time for that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ben. I really appreciated getting your perspective on this. It got me to reflect on something that I hadn't thought about in a while. We hope that you enjoyed this bonus level of the level. If there are any other games, now that you've listened to this entire thing, that you would like us to do a deep dive on that we may or may not have played, it might be a cool thing for us to try. So let us know via the usual channels, and we will try and entertain your asses. All right. Cool.
Have a good night. Thanks for listening.
Yes.